Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today, we tell about reports that the United States has decided to wait a while before it decides what to do about the political crisis in Iraq. Then, we will tell you about a new United Nations report that warns many countries are taking part in digital spying too often and on too many people.
States have an obligation to protect all their citizens against the harm of terrorism. On the other hand, what are the checks and balances?
The United States going slow in Iraq and concerns over digital spying. Those are our subjects today on As It Is. The United States Defense Department has confirmed that it has received reports from U.S. teams sent to Iraq to examine the military and security situation there. But a department spokesman said that it could take some time before any decision is made about what to do next. On June 19th, President Obama announced that the U.S. was sending 300 military advisors to Iraq. He said they would support the Iraqi government in its fight against the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. Information in the reports was leaked to the New York Times. It published stories about the reports. The Times said the reports warn that many Sunni and Shiite extremists have infiltrated Iraqi forces. The newspaper said the reports warned that U.S. military advisors attached to Iraqi army groups could face risks to their safety. In his speech last month, President Obama also made an appeal to Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and other Iraqi leaders. He urged them to rise above religious differences and make the government more inclusive. Since then, the Iraqi parliament has tried three times to elect a new speaker. On Tuesday, June 15th, the parliament elected Sunni politician Salim al-Jabouri as the new speaker, although there were several attempts to prevent the vote. The conflict over who will be the prime minister continues. Mr. Maliki hopes to serve a third term, but he faces strong opposition from Sunni lawmakers and from Kurdish and other Shiite members of parliament. A new United Nations report warns that widespread electronic spying threatens people's right to privacy. The report says this spying happens often instead of rarely. Navi Pillay is the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Her office wrote the report. She is calling for stronger limits on mass spying to protect human rights. The report warns that digital spying is increasing and happens in countries throughout the world. It says it may be more common in countries where the government has good technology. And it says many places do not have enough limits on digital spying. That means such activities could be abused. Ms. Pillay says states must show that they use their digital spying programs for acceptable legal or intelligence gathering purposes. She says government officials must show that these programs do not unlawfully gather information about people. She tells VOA that countries must balance their need for security with the need to protect people's right to privacy.
I, of course, support the efforts made in the United States and other countries to safeguard all of us from acts of terrorism. After all, states have an obligation to protect all their citizens against the harm of terrorism. On the other hand, what are the checks and balances? What kind of safeguards should be in place? And how should states be encouraged to update their laws and so on to keep pace with these developments?
The report says many governments use private companies to help them gather intelligence digitally. Ms. Pillay says she worries about the ways governments use information, both about their own citizens and citizens of other countries.
Some governments have reportedly threatened to ban services of telecommunications companies unless given direct access to communication traffic. Others have tapped fiber optic cables for surveillance purposes or required companies systematically to disclose bulk information on customers and employees. Some have used communication surveillance to target political opposition or dissidents.
Ms. Pillay warns that companies that provide information to a government in violation of human rights law may be found guilty of abuse. She says she believes it is important to protect people who tell about human rights violations. She would not say if she believes American intelligence specialist Edward Snowden should be pardoned. Mr. Snowden made public the mass surveillance program operated by the National Security Agency. But she says the information that Mr. Snowden released aids the debate about secrecy. She says we should thank him for that. She says Mr. Snowden performed a valuable service by telling the public about the issue. She also praised him for urging governments to accept responsibility for their actions. The UN report also expresses concern about spying aimed at people or groups based on their race, ethnicity, or religion. It says such activities violate international human rights law. And that's our program for today. It was based on stories from Jeff Seldon, Edward Uranian, Henry Ridgewell, Mohammed El-Shanawi, and Lisa Schlein. Our program was edited by Katie Weaver and Jerry Watson. Every day here on As It Is, we report on issues that we believe are of interest to you. You can tell us what you want to hear on a future show. We read every message you send us. Write to us. Our mailing address is VOA Learning English, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Email us at learningenglish@voanews.com. Thank you for spending some of your time with us today. We hope this program has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. Jim Tedder will be here tomorrow with another edition of As It Is. I hope you'll join him then, here on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. During the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, Muslims are not supposed to eat or drink anything all day. This is called fasting. People with diabetes can become sick when they fast. Now, some African diabetes patients can receive help with their health before, during, and after Ramadan. Senegal has become the first French-speaking country in Africa to use a wireless phone application called mRamadan. The new application, or app, sends free text messages every day with fasting advice for diabetics. The mRamadan app is part of the Be Healthy, Be Mobile campaign from the World Health Organization and the International Telecommunication Union. The campaign goal is to reduce the large number of emergency hospital visits during Ramadan. Diabetics who are testing the new app say it has been quite helpful, like 26-year-old Marie Gadio. She found out she had diabetes when she was 13. She says living with diabetes during Ramadan is not easy.
Certain diabetics just fast as they want, without knowing anything. But now our technology is developing, and people can take advice from this program.
There are exceptions to the rules about fasting during Ramadan. The very young and old do not have to fast. Pregnant women and people with poor health often are permitted to eat during the day. But many diabetics say they do try to fast during Ramadan. They also sometimes stop taking insulin, a medicine used to control blood sugar levels. Dr. Mayamuna Indur Mbai studies diabetes at the Marc Sankalé National Diabetes Center in Senegal's capital, Dakar. She says diabetics face a number of problems while fasting.
The first risk is hypoglycemia, which can be very harmful for the brain in particular. There is also a risk of hyperglycemia because when they fast, their diabetic is less controlled. They cannot take their medication on a regular basis, and this is a risk.
Dr. Mbai says diabetics are also at an increased risk of dehydration, which is sickness from a lack of water. She says that all diabetics should talk with their doctors before deciding if it is safe not to eat and drink. Some of the mRamadan messages remind people to drink at least 1 liter of water each morning before beginning the fast. Other messages tell how to make changes to medication use. The advice also advises diabetics not to eat too many sugary foods during the breaks in fasting. And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report. I'm Jonathan Evans.
from VOA Learning English. Welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. Baseball is a sport that began in the eastern United States in the 1800s. It became known as the national pastime, a game that millions of people continue to enjoy each spring and summer. Major League Baseball recently opened its new season, so this is a good time to explore the influence of baseball on popular culture, including music and poetry. Many songs and poems have been written about baseball, and today, Shirley Griffith and I will tell you about some of them. Baseball expert Warner Fusel writes that there are probably more than 1,000 songs about baseball. The most popular is Take Me Out to the Ball Game. It was written in 1908 by Jack Norworth. He wrote it after seeing a sign about baseball in an underground train in New York City. His friend, Albert von Tilzer, put the words to music. Mr. Norworth reportedly had never seen a Major League Baseball game. He did not see one until 33 years after he wrote the song.
People still sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game during baseball games.
Time for the stretch. Please welcome John Michael Diaz, Brian McElroy, Michael Ingersoll, and James Speck, Chicago's own Jersey Boys.
All right, fans, let me hear ya.
Near the end of the game, people become tired of sitting on the hard seats. So during a special time in the game, everyone stands up and stretches their arms and legs. This tradition is called the seventh inning stretch. Everyone sings a song together. Most often, it is Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Here it is sung by the National Pastime Orchestra and singers.
Nellie Kelly loved baseball games, knew the players, knew all their names. You could see her there every day, shout hooray when they'd play. Her boyfriend by the name of Joe said, Bucconia, dear, let's go. Then Nellie started to fret and pout, and to him I heard a shout.
Baseball expert Richard Miller writes that many songs about other subjects, such as love, use words and expressions from baseball. For example, in a song written in 1912, a woman tells her boyfriend that she will not like him unless he is a good baseball player. The song is called, If You Can't Make a Hit in a Ball Game, You Can't Make a Hit with Me.
In 1943, George Moriarty wrote a song designed to support American forces fighting in World War II. Mr. Moriarty was a former baseball player and manager for the Detroit Tigers team. His song is called, You're Gonna Win That Ball Game, Uncle Sam. It is performed here by the National Pastime Orchestra and singers.
Uncle Sam, when you play ball, the rules must all be fair. Your name is in our golden frame for playing on the square. Uncle Sam, we've made a vow since that Pearl Harbor raid, and now it's up to you to show them how the game is played. You're gonna win that ball game, Uncle Sam. So pitch that cannonball the way you can. do a slow beginning, but just wait till that ninth inning. You can finish what they all began. Your team is all behind you to a man. So take your bat and make that home run slam. Keep the bases loaded till your hits have all exploded. You're gonna win that ball game, Uncle Sam.
Many songs have been written about America's baseball teams. These include the Brooklyn Dodgers, later the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Philadelphia Phillies, and the Chicago Cubs. Other songs have been written about famous baseball players, Babe Ruth, Jackie Robinson, and Joe DiMaggio.
Hello, Joe. What do you know?
We need a hit, so here I go.
Some people think Joe DiMaggio was the greatest player in the history of baseball. He hit safely in a record 56 games in a row for the New York Yankees in 1941. This record never has been broken. That same year, Les Brown and his band recorded the song Joltin' Joe DiMaggio. Betty Bonney sings about the way DiMaggio hit the ball very, very hard, how he jolted it.
He started baseball's famous streak that's got us all aglow. He's just a man and not a freak, Joltin' Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio, we want you and I.
He tied the mark at 44, July the 1st, you know. Since then, he's hit a good 12 more, Joltin' Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio, we want you on our side.
From coast to coast, that's all you'll hear of Joe, the one-man show. He's glorified the horsehide sphere, Joltin' Joe DiMaggio.
Joe, Joe DiMaggio.
In 1955, a popular musical play about baseball opened on Broadway in New York. It was called Damn Yankees. It was about a middle-aged man who gets a chance to play baseball for his team, the Washington Senators. He plays against the best team in baseball, the New York Yankees. The Senators are not a very good team. Their manager wants them to play better. He urges them to play with all the feeling that is in their hearts. Here the cast of Damn Yankees sings, You Gotta Have Heart.
You gotta have a heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start. You gotta have hope. Mustn't sit around and mope. Nothing's half as bad as it may appear. Wait till next year and hope. When your luck is batting zero, get your chin up off the floor. Mister, you can be a hero. You can open any door. There's nothing to it but to do it. You gotta...
In addition to the many songs written about baseball, there is a famous poem about the game, too. It is called Casey at the Bat. A young man named Ernest Thayer wrote the poem in 1888. It was published in the San Francisco Examiner newspaper. The poem still is popular today. Casey at the Bat is about a baseball team from a town called Mudville. The team is losing an important game. The game is almost over. Mudville is depending on its best player, Casey, to win the game.
The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And then, when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put even money now with Casey at the bat.
To the surprise of the crowd, two players hit the ball well. They reach second and third base. They are ready to score. Then it is Casey's turn at bat. He can win the game if he hits the ball hard enough so that he and the other players can cross home plate. That will give their team more points than their opponent.
There was an ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, no stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip.
The opposing pitcher throws the ball, but Casey does not try to hit it. The pitcher throws the ball again. Again, Casey does not try to hit it. There are now two strikes against him. One more strike, and he will be out. The game will be over. Will Casey finally hit the ball? Will he win the game? The crowd is sure he will.
The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Amy Majeski, Johnny G, Eddie Juiced, Johnny Pesky, Thornton Lee, Danny Gardella, Van Lingle Munglo.
Dave Frischberg is a songwriter and jazz pianist, and he loves baseball. In fact, he wrote a song in which the words are nothing but the names of famous and perhaps some not-so-famous baseball players. Van Lingle Mungo is the name of the song.
Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoki, Big Johnny Mize and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, Galan and Pinky May, Stan Hack and Frenchie Bordagaray, Phil Cavaretta, George McQuinn, Howard Pollett and Early Wynn, Roy Campanella, Van Lingle Mungo.
Our program was written by Shelley Gullist. Jim Tedder read portions of the poem Casey at the Bat. I'm Steve Ember. Join us again next week for another This Is America from VOA Learning English.
Big Johnny Mize and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky.